Only if you're ready, 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 ready. Let's go. Hello, and welcome to Divine Enigma, a podcast that talks about how to navigate through the complexities of the workplace as a modern day professional while simultaneously having a side hustle. We appreciate all of our audience members for taking some time out of their day to tune into another episode and look forward to providing you all with some value through our show today. My name is Sarah and I will be the host for this podcast. This podcast will be available on all platforms where you can find podcasts, including Spotify, Amazon and Apple Podcasts. And we're also on YouTube. Let's get started. Hello, Mutuayo. Thank you so much for coming on to Divine Enigma today. I just would love you to tell the audience members a little bit about yourself, why you wanted to come on the show, and yeah, it'll be lovely to get to know a bit more about you. And more importantly, I wanted to let me not talk too much because I can get into like my chatty mode. So let me let you tell me a little bit, tell me and the audience about yourself and your business.
Thank you so much for having me. I always find this question so awkward. Tell us about yourself. It's so weird, like having to introduce and like talk about myself. I find it so weird. But my name is Mutuayo. Hi guys. My name is Mutuayo. I am the founder of Amfani, and Amfani is a mental well-being app for Black women. And essentially, the gist behind Amfani is that it uses somatic therapy to connect the mind and the body for holistic healing. Essentially, what somatic therapy does is it combines both psychotherapy and physical therapies to help users improve and maintain their mental well-being. We're focusing particularly on Black women because, well, I'm a Black woman with lived experience regarding my mental health, my mental well-being. So I just, you know, I wanted to do something that essentially helped women who look like me because nobody's building for Black women. Why do I want to come on the show? Very, very nice question. Very good question. I recently found out that I am neurodivergent. Recently found out that I have ADHD. I've gone like through, you know, most of my life feeling different, feeling like there's something wrong with me, but never quite knowing what it is and never quite understanding, you know, what's wrong or if there's anything wrong. I just, you know, had an assumption about myself. And, you know, in the past 2 years, figuring out what ADHD was and finding out, and just, I feel like, you know, I feel like a newborn sort of. I feel like I've been reborn and I'm just only, you know, navigating life and just, you know, learning how to walk. So I would say, you know, I wanted to come on here because, you know, we're talking about ADHD, we're talking about being neurodivergent and mental well-being, and I think there's like, and wellness, and those are like some of my favorite things to talk about. So yeah, let's get into it.
So I obviously, a lot of my audience members will know that I have a neurodiverse condition. I was diagnosed when I just graduated from university. In fact, I graduated and I found out, officially got diagnosed when I was in my postgraduate, so quite late in the game of understanding neurodivergency. But my journey, I think a lot of the audience members know that my journey was more sort of an up and down journey. So I was like, yeah, I know I have a neurodiverse condition, but then I started feeling quite sad about it and quite annoyed that I have this issue and that I don't even know what to do with it. So what would be quite good for you, to tell us, is that how did you initially feel about knowing that you had ADHD, and how did that impact you, and was that kind of the inspiration around creating your app? Because I believe it's an app that you're creating right now.
Yes. I didn't quite get the entire question. Could you please repeat it?
Yeah, so obviously now that you have found out that you have ADHD, how did you initially feel about being diagnosed with the condition? So your initial feeling that, oh, okay, I have ADHD. And then also, how have you navigated that journey with having ADHD and also dealing with your mental health around that? Because obviously there is no cure for ADHD as such.
Yeah.
And also, how has that kind of impacted or helped you navigate mental health and well-being with ADHD? Because you came up with this app specifically like targeting Black women, which I think is absolutely fantastic because we always get left behind.
Yes.
And we probably are impacted more by mental health issues, but a lot of the time we're 100%. Not allowed to, I guess...
talk about it, express our mental health, or show it.
What made you, like, from the point that you were diagnosed with ADHD, how did you sort of manage your mental health around that? And also, is the ADHD in alignment with the starting of the app, or was it before that? What made you kind of
Very good question. So when I found that, so I think I found out what ADHD was in 2021. That's when I found out what it actually was. Before 2021, I didn't know what that meant. But in 2021, I was on a program, on a pre-accelerator program, and I met a lady, and she has autism, and she also has ADHD, and she was talking about it, and she was just explaining certain things, and I just kept saying to myself, that sounds like me, that sounds like me, that sounds like me, that sounds like me. Why does that sound like something that I do? Why does that sound like my experience? You know, she's also a Black woman, and she was diagnosed when she was like, well, I think 30, and I think right now she's like 33, 34, I can't remember. So... I just really felt like, you know, I resonated with her story and her journey. So I looked more into it and I realized that, oh my goodness, this is me. And then, you know, contacted my GP, tried to get a diagnosis and whatnot. And the app came before the figuring out what ADHD was. I actually started the app because around 2018, 2019, I struggled a lot with my mental health. I was in a toxic work environment and a very toxic work environment. And I was sick all the time, like physically ill. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. I was in and out of hospitals. You know, I was referred to consultants, was referred to, you know, professionals. And each time, you know, they'd always say, you're healthy, there's nothing wrong with you, you're fine. But my body was taking a beating. Like I had gut issues. I had, had gut issues. I was getting migraines. My period was ridiculous. I had like really bad, you know, menstrual cycle. There was just so much wrong with me. And I didn't know what was wrong, but each time the doctors would tell me there's nothing wrong. And then around 2019, around April 2019, I had just about had enough. So I went to my GP that day and I said, and that, you know how sometimes they give you like different people. So that particular day I had a Black woman, a Nigerian woman actually, and probably old enough to be my mum. And she, and I said to her, and I was like, you know, I've been in a lot of hospitals. They've done so many different tests. They said there's nothing wrong with me, but I don't think that's true. There's something wrong with me. I'm not feeling well. You know, I'd lost a lot of weight. I mean, you could tell there was something wrong with me physically, you know. And I was always like out of work because I was always in the hospital or at some appointment or the other. And then she was just like, okay, well, I can see your record, but I have a few questions for you. And I was just like, okay, sure. Like, I don't know what questions you're going to ask me because they've asked me all the stupid questions and they still haven't seen anything. I think I was sorry. Like, okay, cool, sure, whatever. Do whatever you need to do. And then she was like, oh, what's life like at home? And I was like, I think I was visibly irritated because she'd probably see from my face that I was thinking, what kind of rubbish question? Like, why am I, like, this is not why I'm here. Like, sis, this is not why I'm here. And she was just like, no, like, answer. What's life like at home? And I was like, life at home is fine. Everything is good. Like, alhamdulillah, we're all good. Alhamdulillah, we're great. And it's just like, what's life like? What's your work life like? And then I just started crying. I was like, oh my gosh, I hate my job. I've been trying to like get promoted for like the past year. Every time they'd shift the goalposts and they're doing this to me, they're doing that. This is my experience at work. And she was just like, well, that's exactly what it is. It sounds like you have anxiety and probably high functioning depression because your work is basically hurting you. And then she's like, when you get to work, how do you feel? I was like, well, when I'm not at work, I'm happy. On Sunday night, when I need to start getting ready for work, I'm freaking miserable. And then I get to work and my heart starts pounding as soon as I enter that building, as soon as like my feet touches that oh, my heart is pounding. I feel uneasy. I'm just like, oh my goodness, I'm so sad and so I feel so terrible. And she's just like, yeah, exactly. That's what's wrong with you. And then I think at the time I was just about to turn 25. So she said to me, you're too young for this. You're too young to be in a job that's hurting you, a job that's essentially trying to off you. And she said, I'm going to sign you off work. I'm going to give you a sick note and I'm going to sign you off work. I want you to go home. I want you to take time off work. I want you to go home. I want you to do things you enjoy, maybe travel, you know, relax, spend time with your family, spend time with your friends. I want you to think about what you want to do with your life. And then I want you to quit your job. I was still trying to process. I was just like, huh? Wait. My brain was not working. My mind was not functioning. I was just like, I came here because I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, sis, what are you talking about? And I'd never seen a sick note before because I'd never called, like, I've never, you know, been signed off anything. Do you know what I mean? I've never seen a sick note before. And then she printed it out and signed it and gives it to me. And then I said, okay, so am I supposed to take this into work on Monday? She's looked at me and she's like, no, sis, you're not going to work for the next 6 weeks. You've been signed off work. And I think she must have seen the panic on my face. She's like, but you're still going to get paid. Don't worry. They have to pay you. And I was like, huh? She was just like, and if you need more time off, come back. I was just like, I didn't know what to say. I was just like, wait, what is going on? Like, it took me a while to process it. And, you know, and then I got home, sent the letter, you know, took a picture of the letter and sent it to my manager. And then my manager would, and you know how they do, they're just like, oh, so you're not coming to work? I was just like, please, the GP lady said that I shouldn't deal with you guys, so y'all just take this and leave me alone. and then I think I got the, I think she signed me off, like, for another, like, I think I got the letter, like, another time. I think the first time and the second time, so I got signed off for it like twice. And after that, after the second time, I actually ended in my resignation and decided to go back to do my master's. And then during my master's, COVID happened. And I struggled a lot during COVID. Like my...
Before you carry on, what industry were you working in, just to get a picture for the audience?
Let's take a quick break. I hope you're enjoying Divine Enigma.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Oh, tech. So I was in tech. I'm not technical. So I'm basically a product person. So I've done like a few roles ranging from operations and strategy, product management, and yeah, and so on and so forth. So I'm like a product / business person, but within the tech industry. So I was in the tech space, and you know, I don't know if you know, but tech can be quite toxic for Black women. It's still, you know, a lot of Black people and a lot of women are, you know, entering into the field and the industry, but it can be very toxic. I mean, a phenomenon that I've noticed is that a lot of companies say they want to hire Black women and they say they want Black women, but they can't retain Black women. They don't know how to retain Black women. They have a hard time. So if you like talk to like any Black women in tech, they've probably either had like a toxic experience, or they know somebody who's had a toxic experience. So anyway, went back to do my master's, and then COVID happened, and during COVID I struggled a lot, and I had to like try to figure out how to exactly like deal with my mental well-being. I'm doing a lot of walks, trying to like, and then I started doing yoga. That's when I started doing yoga. And I became like, from like the moment of quitting my job, starting my master's in COVID, I became like obsessed with wellness and mental well-being and like what it means for me to have a mental health issues and feel it physically, right? It sounded so odd to me. Why is it that anxiety and depression is manifesting physically in my body. Like, these conditions we've been told are in your head, quote unquote, or, you know, the issues to do with your brain, issues to do with like your own, you know, maybe your hormones, your mind, whatever. Why am I feeling it so physically? Why do I have, sorry, TMI, why do I have IBS? You know, why have I suddenly developed IBS? Why do I have migraines all the time? You know, it was so fascinating to me. And I think that's when I just started to look more into it and trying to like research a bit more, trying to figure out how to help myself. And, you know, and because, you know, none of my friends have had this situation before. No one in my family has been here before. I'm literally navigating, like, you know, new waters by myself. So I was just doing just a lot of reading, started doing yoga, doing a lot of movement, doing a lot of stuff. I find that yoga really helps me sleep at night because I was having sleep issues. So I do it just before bedtime, you know, exploring different stuff. And that kind of led me down a rabbit hole where I was like, wait, if I'm experiencing this, how many other Black women are experiencing this? So I think I became like hyper fixated on the problem. I was like, I need to know what's going on and how it's affecting other people and how many other people are going through it. And I've always been obsessed with everything Black women. So I didn't want to know how other people are dealing with it. I just wanted to know how Black women are doing. So I was like, Black women, how are you doing? Let's see, let's talk. So I think from my research, I found out, like, you know, in this country, in England, in the UK, Black women are more likely to develop mental health disorders. But because, you know, there's so many different factors, we're also the least likely to seek help, right? We're the least likely to actually say, there's something wrong with me. Mainly, like we've already mentioned, you know, we're not allowed to talk about it. With, you know, partly to do with our community, partly to do with, you know, the lack of trust with, you know, healthcare professionals, so many different factors. And then all this was
with Black women and mental health, there's a lot.
There's so much. I think especially when we then really narrow it down to like into how intersectional we are, right? We've got, you know, like for me, for example, I'm a Black Muslim woman. I'm a Black visibly Muslim woman. I'm a firstborn daughter. I'm a, you know, first gen, you know, I'm an immigrant. There's so many like different factors, right? There's so much to unpack. And like the more you go into it, the more we're like, you know, you can't really talk about these things. You just have to suck it up. And, you know, you have people who you need to look after. You have people you need to, like, you know, you have responsibilities. You don't really have time to be sad or, you know, to be upset or whatever. And I think, and I also started therapy around that time as well. I was like, oh, therapy, let's see what this does. Like, how does this, you know, I just started exploring a lot of well-being and mental health, like, you know, stuff. And I guess during my master's, I literally, like I said, I went down a rabbit hole of like research. And whilst I was finishing up my master's, I decided that actually I want to do something about this. I don't really know how I'm going to go about it. I don't know what I want to do, but I want to do something. So from like researching, I was like, okay, I think the problem might be like, maybe we need just an app that caters to Black women specifically. And then I was like, and then I discovered what somatic symptoms meant, which is what I had, right? I had somatic symptoms, I had physical symptoms, bodily symptoms. And then it was literally me just discovering so many different things, speaking to a lot of Black women, asking them what they're going through, experimenting with different ideas, speaking to healthcare professionals, psychologists, therapists, and just trying to like formulate something and come up with an idea, which is like basically how this idea came about. And around the same time, I found out what being neurodivergent meant. I found out what ADHD was at the same time. So it was like, I actually found out when I was on the pre-accelerator program after, you know, I've already had the idea after once I started working on the app. And I think then it made me realize that when a lot of us Black women are just being diagnosed with, you know, neurodivergent like conditions. It's insane how so many of us are being diagnosed in like our late 20s, early 30s, late 30s. It's incredible. And then I also
sometimes
that's do you know what? Yeah, I hear it because I definitely think my mum has it and she's in her 50s. So yeah.
My mum got diagnosed with dyspraxia and dyslexia when she was 54.
Wow.
So she found out.
That's amazing. I think I'm going to make my mum actually get tested. I'm going to make her get tested because I sometimes look at that woman and I'm like, girl, I see you. It's written all over you. I see it. And then that then also opened up like another door and another conversation, right, with being neurodivergent and having mental health disorders, right? It's a bit of chicken and egg, right? What came first, right? Is it the ADHD? Did the ADHD cause the depression and the anxiety, or you know the do you know what I mean? So like how do we then balance it out? Because I've realized that, and also by research, a lot of adults who have, you know, who are neurodivergent have mental health issues, right? We have anxiety and depression, and you know, so it's like, okay, and so it got me really questioning myself. Did my ADHD cause me to have depression and anxiety? Was it that my job was no longer stimulating? Was that how it developed? Because it was literally from me struggling to be promoted and just feeling like I was in a dead end and feeling unheard and feeling like, you know, misunderstood and just feeling a lot of things. And I realized that actually from now, there are a lot of people having conversations about, you know, ADHD symptoms and it's linked to anxiety and depression. But I was just like, how can we emphasize and have conversations around how, you know, people with ADHD or any other neurodivergent, you know, condition, how can we shift the focus on, you know, discussing these mental health issues? Am I making sense? Like, I feel like we need to also talk about how can we then improve our well-being by, you know, I don't know, like by engaging, you know, trying to actually delve deeper into understanding how ADHD is linked to poor mental health. I mean, it's blatant, like it's apparent, like you can see it, right? If you're struggling with paying your bills, if you're struggling with maintaining your finances, you can see how you can enter a depressive episode or, you know, start having anxiety. But I just think it's a conversation we need to have more, and I guess I'm glad we're having this conversation. I feel like I've literally like gone on a tangent.
No, it's good. I wanted to you to kind of explain what somatic therapy is, because it's quite a new term. I've heard it, but I'm not exactly sure if I know, or if my audience members will actually know what that is. Yeah, what do you think people think it is, or what would they if someone said, I'm going to have somatic therapy, what does that mean for that person? What would they be getting? Because it sounds like a very new term to me, and probably for some of the audience members, they'll be like, well, what's that? There's so many different types of therapy. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about therapy and making sure you have the right type of therapy, because sometimes people say go into therapy, and sometimes a lot of the time I've been very reluctant to go to therapy myself because of poor experience. But we'll get into that later. But what is somatic therapy? And just kind of explain that for the audience members so they can kind of understand what that means.
Sure. So somatic essentially means like bodily. So it's like, so if you have somatic symptoms, it means you have physical symptoms. And somatic symptoms essentially combines... Well, with somatic therapy, it's body-centered, and it basically examines the correlation between physical and mental states. So it takes into consideration like your physical symptoms and your mental symptoms. So what it does is it basically incorporates like different psychotherapeutic and physical technique to basically create holistic healing, like not just a, you know, like with like CBT, you're just exploring the mind, right? But with somatic therapy, it's like it takes into consideration the body and the mind. And with Black women, we are more likely to develop somatic symptoms. So a study by NYU recently and Yale, well, about so I think 2022, they discovered that Black women are more likely to develop somatic symptoms, and essentially it's the first of its kind. So I think they were conducting a research on high blood pressure in mothers and their newborn babies, and they discovered that, wait, Black women, and they ventured into depression, and they found out that Black women are more likely to develop somatic symptoms when they have mental health disorders such as depression, which means it'd be harder for them to be diagnosed because healthcare professionals miss the symptoms, they misdiagnose it, because I mean research is mostly centered around white people and white men. But anyway, I digress. So essentially what somatic therapy can do is it can benefit individuals dealing with depression, anxiety and stress, because the fundamental belief of somatic therapy is it's that the mind and the body are intertwined, which is true, right? negative emotions and trauma can essentially, you know, affect the body, which will cause obviously further detriment to our mental health. For example, when I was having issues with my gut, when I was having migraines, I honestly thought that I was having I thought I had like a terminal issue because I was sick all the time and, you know, there was just always something. So with Anthony, what we're trying to do is we want to merge like different techniques. So somatic therapy, essentially, it's still CBT. We're still having like talking therapy, but it also focuses on like mindfulness stuff. So meditation, dance, movement, physical activity. So essentially what we're trying to do is build a platform that will allow you to, you know, do your talking therapy, use CBT techniques, but also explore physical techniques or physical, you know, activities. So yoga, dance, you know, mindfulness, meditation. So essentially that's what it is. We're basically trying to create a comprehensive wellness solution that will enhance the mental well-being for Black women and positively, hopefully, impact their lives and improve the quality of their lives. I don't know if that answers your question, or if that's no, or if it's not, too is it too broad or is it too is it still too technical?
You know, it does answer the question, but in my head I'm probably thinking, so obviously you did a talking therapy and maybe the somatic part would be maybe have, I don't know, some sort of physical treatments.
So
acupuncture, perhaps.
Yeah, the psychotherapy aspect of it and the physical therapy of it, combining it is what makes it somatic. So it's not right. that the psychotherapy sits on its own and then the you know, physical therapy sits on its own. No, it's a combination of both, right? To create right. holistic healing, right? Because more than ever, you know, usually it's someone's depressed, talking therapy, medication, and that's it, right? But with somatic therapy, it also promotes physical, like psychotherapy, you know, you talking therapy and, you know, exploring ways of dealing with trauma. So journaling and talking to somebody and, you know, trying to, you know, really understand, you know, how your trauma has affected you and stuff like that. But it's also taking, like you said, maybe acupuncture and yoga and dance and, you know, other physical activities. It's basically combining both. So it's not that you do one and you do the other. It's they both go hand in hand. They both have to be present to basically facilitate you know, comprehensive healing, holistic healing. So does that answer your question? Also, disclaimer, I am not a psychotherapist. I'm not a clinical psychologist. I am not a mental health practitioner. I am just a girl who has mental health issues, who's trying to find ways to heal and who has been, you know, researching a lot and also trying to talk to, like, you know, therapists and professionals to create a product that will essentially improve the quality of lives for Black women. So just a disclaimer.
No, thank you for that. I had a question around therapy just in general. So yeah. I find within our community there is a stigma with therapy, that going to speak to someone, and particularly if you come from the diaspora or you come from an African community, Caribbean community as well, I'll also include, they will always promote either go to the mosque, go to church, go and pray. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have therapy. What is the therapist going to do to help you? You can go to God.
Why are you telling people your business?
There's a culture thing, and also that could cause, although many might mean well from it, it can also cause a form of trauma around that, because you're probably dealing with this issue of feeling, you know, this way, I'm praying to God, but it's not working. What can I do? How can you incorporate that with someone who is a person of faith like yourself? Like myself, I'm Christian, you're Muslim. Our faiths are, I guess, very important to us. But how do you kind of like combine that with that therapy and things like that and being like true to yourself and your faith in terms of aligning the two together? Because I feel like therapy is one of those things that you... Like I've had a couple of therapy sessions before, but I've been kind of on the fence with therapy because I had a very bad experience with therapy years ago. And I feel a little bit, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe a little bit, little trauma in that kind of sense, because I went to this therapist hoping that I would get help, and I came out feeling like this person was just talking about themselves. I didn't feel like I was getting any fun from it. So I think it's very important to find the right therapist, the person that understands your culture, your background, and get a teaser if that person sits with you. Like maybe even have like a meeting with the person initially and think, are they right for me or not right for me? And I don't know if that's the right thing.
Yes.
It does. No. I think a lot of people like to throw this away thing, like going to see a therapist, but not really thinking deeply about how to go about finding the right therapist.
I am so glad. Yeah, I'm so glad like you, this question is what were, this question came up. So one of the, my experience with therapy was quite interesting. When I wanted to start therapy, I knew that I wanted a black woman, right? I didn't really understand, I think then I didn't really understand it, but I knew I needed a black woman because I felt like as a firstborn daughter, and black, you know, or African firstborn daughter, I need somebody who understands me, who I don't have to explain cultural norms to. And I realized that that helped me with my experience a lot because my therapist understood my cultural norms. I understood what it meant to be a black Muslim woman, you know. So I think definitely, and one of the things I'm finding wants to do is create a platform where people can connect, where black women can connect to culturally competent professionals that actually understands them culturally and, you know, and that they can connect with. But to answer your question about how do we, you know, therapy still being taboo in our community, how do we then deal with, you know, being a person of faith and, you know, struggling? Personally, Islamically, we're told that if there's something wrong, seek help, right? Islamically, and that has nothing to do with culture. That's just Islam, right? Now, where the problem comes is our people and our culture, where you don't talk and you're not supposed to, you know, show a sign of weakness. So my question to them is, a question I usually ask is, if you fell and break your arm, or let's say you broke your leg, what would you do? Would you...
You'd go to the hospital, wouldn't you?
Exactly. Would you pray the bone? Like, would you pray and say, okay, bone, you need to like... I don't know. Like, would you be like, oh, like, God, please... I mean, of course you pray to God to facilitate your healing and to make it quicker. But would you say, okay, oh, God, oh, now help me put the bone back together without a cast, without seeing a doctor, with nothing? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't do that, right? You'd go to a doctor, the doctor would examine what's wrong, and the doctor would diagnose you, and the doctor would create a path for treatment, right? A treatment pathway, whatever. It's the same for mental health. But I think because we can't actually physically see, well, that's debatable, but in the traditional sense of mental well-being, you can't physically see the symptoms. You can't say... Exactly. It's more like abstract, right? You can't touch it. You can't feel it. You can't, I mean, if someone's brain's broken, you can look at it and you see it looking squidgy and you're like, yeah, that's broken, you know, right?
Yeah.
But with mental health, we can't see that. So I think it kind of makes us think it's not real or it doesn't exist or it's just something that we're, or maybe we're just sensitive. Maybe I'm just being too sensitive or maybe I'm just being, you know, too weak. Which is usually what they say, right? Like sometimes, I don't know if you've experienced it, but sometimes, you know, maybe when you're younger, you say to your mom, mom, I'm sad, I feel depressed. And be like, what are you depressed about? You don't have bill, you don't have a plan, what's going on? What do you mean you're depressed? What is there to be depressed about? What do you mean?
That's what yeah.
Right.
I understand that where that's coming from, because I think a lot of our culture feels like if they're meeting the basic needs, there's no need to be depressed.
Exactly, right. Exactly. I liken that to, you know, breaking a bone, and you know, when we break a bone we'd have to seek for help. I see it in the same way as, you know, as our mental well-being, when you're sad, when you're depressed, when you have anxiety, you know, when you have maybe some other conditions, you need to see somebody, you need to talk to somebody. The person needs to examine you, figure out what your symptoms are, and put you on a pathway for treatment, right? And that's literally what I always say to people when they say to me, okay, but like, you know, how do you then convince somebody to go to therapy, or what's the need for a therapist? You need a therapist just as much as you need a doctor when you've broken something or when you've hurt something, you know? One thing that I have noticed, though, is a lot of young people, or a lot of young Black people, are starting to challenge the norms. So a lot of us home and, you know, in the diaspora, we are actually talking more about mental health. We're talking more about, you know, our experiences, and we're actually exploring these things more because, you know, we're feeling the effects physically. And, you know, I mean, with Black men have like that one of the highest rate of suicide in this country. What's causing it? Trigger warning. Sorry, am I allowed to say that?
No, okay.
Yeah, like, you know, these things. And I feel like we're having more and more of the conversation, but we need to facilitate an environment that allows us to have that conversation. Like a podcast, for example, right? You're creating an environment, you're creating a community where people feel safe, right? Where people can show up safely. And I think that's the keyword. The keyword is creating an environment, a community where people feel safe to show up authentically and to show up and tell their stories and to show up and say, oh, I'm experiencing this. Do you know what this means? Or I'm experiencing this. Do you also experience it? And the reality is, before you even ask people if they're experiencing it, those who are experiencing it with you will tell you, oh, I'm experiencing that too, right? And you're not alone. And, you know, we're in this together, sort of thing. So I feel like, you know, we just need to continue creating an environment, a safe environment for people to talk their truth. We need to, let people know that it's okay. And I just need for this whole Black women are strong schema to die. Like, I need it to die immediately, because this whole facade of superwoman, Black women are so strong, is so detrimental to our health, physically and mentally, that we're not doing ourselves any favors. I personally do not want to be a strong Black woman. I want to be a marshmallow. I don't want to be a strong Black woman. I want to be as soft as it get. Like, I want to be the softest of the soft. Please, I'm not strong. I will talk about my feelings. I will talk about my emotions. I will talk about how sensitive I'm feeling. You know, I'll talk about it all. And if I need to speak to someone, I will go to them and I will talk to them. I think the problem as well is that because for a very long time, wellness and mental well-being and mental health and well-being has been seen as a white thing. We sometimes, you know, attribute it to white people. Like, maybe if, you know, maybe you're watching a TV show and then the, you know, the character's Caucasian and they're like, oh, I'm, you know, something. We're like, yep, that's how white people be. White people be doing like that. You know, like, you make a joke and you're like, oh, it's a white people thing, you know? But it's not a white people thing, it's a human thing, right? It's a human thing. And I think we need to normalize that and just be like, this is normal. There's nothing wrong, you know, it doesn't mean you're, you know, too westernized or too sensitive. It just means you're human. And that's it. And to just humanize it and just to be like, we're human. First and foremost, we're human, whether you're Black or white or Asian, we're human. And let's be real, blood flows through all of our bodies the same way. And, you know, we feel in the same manner, and just letting people know that it's normal, I think. And yeah, and allowing us to show up authentically and challenging the norms. You know, there are more and more Black therapists coming up, but there is obviously still a shortage of Black people pursuing psychology or psychotherapy and stuff like that. So one of the things we are trying to facilitate, that we want to facilitate, is, of course, we want to have a database of Black therapists and, you know, therapists who look like you and me, but also facilitate a platform that trains people who do not look like me and you to be culturally competent, right? Because there's only so many Black therapists you can find. But we also need to, you know, because, I mean, I remember when I did therapy, my best friend and I actually coincidentally started therapy at the same time. And like I said, I purposely chose a Black therapist. My therapist, she's from the Caribbean, but she understood like my cultural norms as an African woman, as a Black African, as British Nigerian. My best friend, on the other hand, had a white woman, and she'd spend some of her, you know, I don't like, therapy is very expensive, very expensive. And I think it's probably the most, it's not cheap, right?
At all. It's not always affordable and accessible.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So one of the things that she would spend like maybe half of her session explaining to her therapist why, as a black woman or as a firstborn Nigerian daughter to migrant parents, she can't just go home and say, talk anyhow to her mom, right? Like, oh, why can't you just tell your mom how you feel? Why don't you just tell her that you don't like what she does? I said, girl, your therapist is trying to get you killed, right? Do it at your own detriment, right? And my therapist understood cultural norms. And that was when the first time I realized, actually, there's a divide, there's a cultural divide, and there's a big issue if we're trying to, like, obviously get on a path of healing, but, you know, your person is not helping you as much as they should, which is when I was like, okay, cool, we need to actually teach these people, or teach people who don't look like you and I, to actually understand the cultural norms so they can actually help us more effectively. And then I think another thing that I was trying to figure out is how to subsidize therapy, right? Therapy is expensive if you go privately, right? And there's a huge wait list for the NHS, massive wait list for the NHS. How can we help Black women, you know, heal and maintain, a positive or a healthy mental well-being? We're trying to actually figure out how we can, you know, charge less and help them. So that's one thing we're currently trying to work on, is actually how do we, you know, price this and make sure it's affordable. Because like you said, it's really, you know, like you and I know of, therapy is not very affordable. What else? I'm trying to think of like some of the questions you've asked me and the point I'm trying to make.
And I did have a question around the loneliness of feeling, the mental health issues, how, you know, that can affect you as a Black woman. Generally, when you're going through this difficult time in your life, it can be quite lonely. And where do you reach out for solace in that time where you're trying to just navigate these feelings that you don't quite understand
why you're
feeling this way, and then it's affecting you physically as well?
Yeah, very, very good question. And one of the reasons why with Amfani, I really emphasized on building a community where Black women can shop authentically and where Black women can feel safe. When I was sick, I have my mom, my sisters, my best friend, my closest girlfriends. And, you know, my mom would drive me. You know, I went to NE so many times. My mom would take me. My best friend would drive me. When I'm not feeling too great, my sister would literally look after me. And I realized that not a lot of people have that. Or even not looking after me physically, I had people I could speak to. Even if sometimes I felt like maybe I was doing too much, or maybe I was, you know, a burden, I had people who would tell me, if you need to talk, just talk to me. I had that community. And alhamdulillah, like, it didn't feel too, although, pardon me, having a mental health disorder can feel lonely because you feel like people don't understand you, even when people are there for you. But even if they're not experiencing it, sometimes you do feel like there's a divide. I had that community, I would say. And it's one of the reasons why with Amfani, and funny enough, Amfani is a Yoruba word and it means advantage or beneficial. And a lot of the time when people use Amfani, it's usually to do with community, right? For the benefit of us, for the advantage of us, for the advantage of our community. So even when I chose the name, I wanted a name that signifies community, that signifies togetherness, that signifies, you know, advantage and beneficial impact. And, you know, that's why we really, 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 really want to be the community where Black women feel like they can, you know, they can, even if they don't know a lot of people, they can show up and they can find somebody who would understand how they feel and who they can talk to and who would make them feel less lonely. You know, sometimes we don't even want to talk to our family, even if and when our family and friends are supportive, right? Sometimes you feel like maybe you're a burden and you don't want to, and you want to go out, you know, you want to speak to people external to your situation. So it is hard, but I didn't experience it as much. But I understand and I know that people do experience that, which is one of the reasons why, like I said, we're trying to create a community where Black women can show up authentically and where Black women can feel safe. Because let's be real and let's be honest, there really isn't a lot of places where we feel safe. there really is not a lot of spaces where we feel safe.
I know sometimes if you're a black woman coming from another country and you've left your family and you've come to the UK or the US and you've come to study and you don't have any friends and you're now trying to navigate this, maybe you're going to a major city like London, New York, wherever it may be, and you're trying to navigate that city on your own, trying to make new friends, trying to understand how culture works.
Yeah.
That could be very lonely and that could be really hard as well. And anytime you have that communication, maybe you might get to meet your parents on Zoom or get to
call
or whatever, but it's just not, it's not the same, you know.
It's not,
you need that human interaction. I feel like an app like that would be really fantastic for particularly black women who have left or they've gone to a new city or somewhere else where they're trying to navigate their career, similar to you working in the corporate world, you're working in the tech space, which the tech space, don't see many black women in that space. It's funny enough because when you tell me about some of the stories of some of the black women in the tech space, I was speaking to a colleague, because I work in sort of tech as well, she was talking about a particular black woman in a very well-known company. I don't want to say the name. but she it was a very well-known tech firm. That's all you need to know.
Okay.
One of the top five.
Okay. You can tell me off. Once we're done, I want the tea. I want the tea after.
One of the top fives. And she's one of the few senior black leads there.
Yeah.
And the one woman came up to me and said, oh, you know, this particular, she's a Nigerian lady as well. One of this lady, you know, she has a big character, which was a word that she used.
What does that mean?
Big character. She's actually upsetting the senior people there because her character. Maybe, you know, you should go and speak to her, or maybe she needs mentorship because, you know, she doesn't seem to be fitting into the, you know, environment. She's very intelligent, she's very good at what she does, but her character and her personality just doesn't fit the culture, that kind of language that was used. And I thought, okay, no problem, we'll look at to mentor her. And I was thinking to myself, like, what do you mean mentor her? Like, she's just being herself. The problem we have is that being a black woman, particularly if you're a black woman in a senior role, I think if you make your point about something, you're taking up too much room, so you need to
100%
know your place.
Yep.
If you're quiet, this is the other thing. If you're quite introverted, well, you come across, you know, standoffish.
You're not a team player. Yeah.
You're not a team player. So where do we
what can we do? You know,
we're constantly policed, even when we're felons. So it's like, what do you do? And I just felt like, how can you come to us and tell us about mentorship?
Yeah.
Where she's not doing anything wrong other than being herself and doing her job well. But the problem is you have a problem with her being vocal about things
that are
not working, and it's because it's coming from a black woman, it's seen as a negative thing. And I just find it very frustrating that this is a thing that happens, that you'll get to a certain level as a black woman, you work in a senior role, and then you're told, you're taking up too much room, pipe down. It's difficult, and that can affect you mentally, because you'll start, this is where the things like imposter syndrome will
come
into it, because you start thinking to yourself, but you know, I have the qualifications, I have that, or maybe I don't, or what am I doing wrong? And that means that's where that strong black woman concept, because you have to
it's
like a strong black woman, and it's like,
there's no winning, is there?
You can't win.
and that's essentially what's even causing like more anxiety, right? Because you're like, okay, if I go into work, you're like spending like 50% of your brain capacity to do your job, and then the other 50% trying to fit into a certain mold so you don't ruffle feathers, right? So you're not showing up firstly you can't show up to work authentically, you cannot be yourself, right? Second, and you have to code switch, and I'm not gonna lie to you, oh gosh, it's actually after a long day of code switching, I don't even want to talk anymore, leave me alone, nobody chat to me, you know, because you're tired. Secondly, like, you know, you're trying to do your job to the best of your abilities and to make sure that you're doing it even better than the people who are senior to you, so nobody has anything to say about the quality of your work. And you're spending, like, let's say 50% of your brain capacity to make sure you're doing your job properly and better and going above and beyond, and the other 50% trying to fit into a certain type, you know, of a certain mold. Like, When, tell me how we would not develop a mental health disorder. Tell me how the person isn't going to develop anxiety. Tell me how the person is not going to become depressed or start having panic attacks at work or have crying spells at work. Do you know what I mean? It's just like I said, like these, and if we're being honest, we'll spend more than like 50% of our, we spend about like, more than like about 90% of our time at work, right? Don't we? We spend so much time at work. You know, we practically live at, we're at work more than we're at home, right? So imagine all that time you're literally spending in navigating a toxic environment, a toxic situation that doesn't allow you to shop authentically. Of course, you're going to develop a mental health disorder. Your productivity is going to go down the drain eventually, right? And I mean, you just feel like, I can't be myself. I need to wear a mask. I need to be, you know, and then if you have a neurodivergent, you know, if you're neurodivergent, that's another layer to navigate. Actually, I have a story.
I have a story.
So I remember my workplace, the last place I worked before I decided I'm not doing it anymore. The one that essentially tried to kill me. I mean, if I tell you, there's only two of that type of business that are quite big in the UK right now. So I'm not going to tell you what business it is, because if I tell you, you would definitely know who they are. But there was an issue. They brought a consultant in, and there was an issue, right? And the consultant, and then one of my like, not my teammates, but somebody from another team was asking the consultant a certain question about a business, a certain type of business, and what to do if a business is registered in two different places. And I just overheard this conversation. By the way, I was speaking to somebody and I overheard this conversation. Bear in mind, both parties are Caucasian. So, you know, the guy was like, oh, what, where are the countries the business registered? And the person said, oh, it's registered in the UK and it's registered in Nigeria. And the guy goes, oh, ignore that account or ignore that application, don't approve anything to do with that person. Nigerians are fraudsters and they're 419 and just ignore it.
Wow.
And I turned around and I said to him, and I asked him, I said, how many Nigerians have you met? How many Nigerians have you dealt with? How many Nigerian fraudsters have you dealt with? He said, none. I said, so why did you say that? And he said, I don't know. And you could literally hear a pin drop in the office. And I got so irritated and annoyed, and I just walked away. And then a few minutes later, my manager calls me and he goes, oh, you need to learn how to, you know, not offend people, because it's going to make you really difficult to work with and nobody will want to work with you.
Oh, wow.
And I said, okay, but if the person is saying something that's wrong, somebody needs to challenge it. And I have a strong sense of injustice, like a very strong sense of injustice. I cannot let things slide. When I know somebody is saying the wrong thing or saying horrible things or just being offensive, I cannot let it slide. I've tried. I just can't. Like, I can't. I really wish I could, but I really cannot. So, and he was just like, yeah, it's going to make it hard for people to work with you. You know, you're going to like offend people and people would call you difficult, and you just have to like, you know, not, you need to learn how to just let things be. And in that moment, I was just like, yeah, I can't do this. I cannot do this. I cannot do this. I can't do this. I think I have PTSD from being in the office, actually. I hate office spaces now. I cannot do it, honestly, for the life of me. It's so sad how we've been put in a position that is literally detrimental to our mental well-being. You know, we feel stress, and stress is a silent killer, and that's the thing. And the reality is, all this situation puts you in a stressful mode, right? You're stressed, your body's like, you know, the cortisol in your body is so high, you don't realize how much effect it has on your body and how detrimental it is to your body. And essentially, it not only is it affecting your mental well-being, but it's killing you slowly, right? And the racism, the sexism, all the isms, you know, that you can, I mean, take me for example, I'm a visibly Black Muslim woman. I wear the hijab, right? I'm already, there's a lot of isms flying around, right? There's a lot of phobias and ism flying around. So, you know, having to deal with certain and navigate certain spaces, even as a founder, right? Let's not even go into that, please. That's a whole nother story. But like, even as a founder, you know, there's an issue. But one thing that I would say to Black women is take up space. Take up space. You will know at the time here. And with my big, what do they say? They say she has a big character or something along those lines. Yes, my character is big.
Yeah.
Get used to it. Take up space. And I think one thing I would say is if you're in a senior position, bring in more people who look like you and facilitate the entrance for people who look like you. So the more of PU they see, the more they realize that these people are not going anywhere. They're here to stay. Like literally, do you know what I mean? No, they're not going anywhere. They're here to stay, and they're going to take up space, and they're going to, they're going to take up space, and they're going to, you know, try and show up authentically. I would say, and I mean, a lot of these companies are quite performative in the sense of, oh, you know, we want you to be able to be yourself and whatnot and whatnot. Okay, if you want me to be myself, how about you facilitate an event for Black History Month? You know, you have the money, facilitate it, you know, having these conversations with them and making sure they're paying you. If they ask you to do the work, better build them. You better build them. Do not do it for free. Pardon me, because it doesn't fall on you to do the job. It's not on you, it's on them. So if they want your expertise as a Black woman or Black man to help them, you know, do whatever it is they feel they need to do, charge them. Okay, be like, okay, cool. Well, you know, as a consultant, I would come in as a consultant to help you to do this. This is my fee, and get your money. So, you know, continue showing up, continue being the big character person, and, you know, if they give you bass, you also give them boost back. That's it. So, you know, you give it. You go, you know, you yeah.
I've got a controversial question to ask.
Ooh, I'm scared.
It's a little bit controversial. But have you ever been in a situation where another person of colour, could be a Black woman, maybe an Asian, maybe someone who's mixed, or even a Black woman like yourself, in the workplace where the majority of people in that company or organization are white, has not helped you along the way?
Yes.
Have you ever had that situation occur? Because sometimes we forget that we have, sometimes in our own community, we have what we call internalized racism.
Yes.
And as much as it's good to like be Black positive, see more Black people coming up,
mm-hmm.
we also have this issue within our own community where there is a form of internalized racism. And I find sometimes I'll find maybe there's a Black woman who's a senior lead. I'll see, oh my God, there's a Black woman who's a senior lead. And I'll go to that Black woman and I think, oh my God, she can fit. And then I find that's not the same vibe I'm getting from her.
Yeah.
This happened to me when I was very, very, very early in my career when I wanted to work in the media industry. And there was a particular well-known like a media personality that I really looked up to since I was a kid. I thought, oh my God, I meet her. I worked with her, and then her behavior towards me was really different. It wasn't very supportive, and I found that so strange because we're both Black, and I didn't understand that. And that was the first time I experienced this. I was very young at the time. As I've obviously matured and got older, I began to understand maybe there was an insecurity there. I don't know, or understand the fact that there's internalized racism, but I didn't know that because I just went there very naively, like fresh out of uni, you know,
big dreams, naive. Definitely, I've been there. My manager that I said those things to me was an Asian person, he was quite. I would say quite horrible. I've had situations with like other Black women where, you know, when I try to talk about my experience in that specific workplace, they're like, I don't know what you mean. Like, they don't treat me like that. So clearly you must be it must be in your head or you're making it up. I would say though, with senior Black women, there were two Black women who had my back, and I'm so grateful to them. And funny enough, one of them actually left that particular workplace and took them to a tribunal because they tried it with her too. So the other one is still there. I know of. I mean, she took a while for her to make it up the ladder, but she is now. But the senior black leads that I met were quite, black women that I met were quite helpful and very kind. I would say maybe some of my peers weren't so great, but yeah, I would say I've had that experience. And it's one of the things that when I think about, I mean, the other day somebody asked me about the culture, what kind of culture I want my business to have, and you know, what kind of workplace culture do I envision? And I just think to myself, I want to create a business where, with a work culture where black women can show up authentically, where black women can come to work and they come to work. And when they're coming to work, they're so happy because they know that they come in and they have black women who look like them, who are supportive, who are, you know, dedicated to their growth and their advancement. And they know that they can come up, they can be themselves. They don't have to worry about, oh, well, how am I doing my hair? Or, you know, is my tone going to be taken wrong when I'm passionate, right? If my voice gets a bit stronger because I'm passionate about a certain project, are people going to look at me and say, oh, that one, she's a bit aggressive, isn't she? Like, nobody's going to look at me like that. I want to cultivate a workplace where black women feel seen, feel like they can be themselves, and actually, you know, where there's just empathy, you know, because I feel like people are just lacking empathy. And that's why a lot of people think maybe black women need to be dealt with differently, or maybe even us internalizing certain, you know, beliefs about ourselves, right? And then there's like this book called The Other Black Girl. And then they made it into a movie. On Disney Plus. Yeah. Like, kind of that kind of situation. We don't want that kind of nonsense, but it does exist. And it's quite sad that we feel like that some people feel like there can only be one of us, you know? It's so sad and it's so upsetting. And I really do feel, and I really do pray for them, you know, the people who feel like that. Like, I really pray that they divorce whatever internal hatred they have for themselves very soon.
So, wanna end on a high note.
Okay.
So, going forward, where can people, first of all, going forward, what tips can you give to black women in terms of how they can manage their neurodiverse conditions and dealing with that intersectionality of being black and neurodiverse? How best can they manage that in a working environment, within their career, even starting a business? What is your key tip for them? And what have you learned on your journey of being a neurodivergent black woman, starting a business, and also working in the tech space as well? So the first question was, how can you advise black women that are neurodivergent to manage neurodiversity in their career or business, and how have you done that yourself? And it's kind of the same question into one, but
I would say, first of all, transparency and really like knowing yourself and understanding that. I think one of the things I had to really convince understand is, there's nothing wrong with me, right? I'm not weak, or I'm not useless. These are some of the words I've used to describe myself in the past, by the way. Useless, stupid, you know, incapable, not smart. Firstly, to understand that this world or this society is geared towards neurotypical people. And what it just means is that our brains do not work in the same manner. It's not that our brain does not work. Our brain just doesn't work in the same way. And understanding that and making our brain work for us in its best capacity, right? For example, I realized that I need a routine. When I don't have a routine, I feel like I'm floating and I don't get anything done. So I need to create a routine for myself. Right. So and also I burn out quite easily, but I also want to do a lot of things. So I've learned them.
My brain is always like
trying to go, literally like 100 miles per hour, like she's just going and going and going. And I realized that, and it took me a while to realize this, right? It took me quite a lot of burnout, quite a lot of you know, dropping the ball a few times, and you know, to really figure out these things. And what I've realized is that I need to make my brain work for me and tailor my schedule to what I know of myself, not what I wish I was like, but what I know, right? If I can only have two key things on my schedule for the day, that's it. That's enough. Packing up my schedule with so many things doesn't mean I'll be productive, right? It would make me look busy, but let's be honest, I'm not going to get anything done. I'm not going to get anything
just
done.
Looking at it, like,
I'll be looking at it. Exactly. I'll be looking at it. It'll be looking at me. You know that meme of Diddy and that guy on the stage?
Oh,
you know that
meme?
Right. Uh-huh. That's me. Yes. I'm Diddy and my to-do list is that guy, and we're looking at each other and we're not, no one's moving.
Okay.
So
you're looking at me,
exactly. I'm looking at you. Exactly. That is literally it. So I've realized that. So my advice is acceptance. Honestly, just accept yourself the way you are. There's nothing wrong with you. All it means is your brain works differently. And if you're a person of faith, if you're a believer, one of the things you need to understand is God does not make mistakes. So when God created you, he did not make any mistake. God is free of imperfection, right? He doesn't make mistakes. So there's nothing wrong with you. There's no mistakes. You are exactly the way God wants you to be for whatever reason, known best to him. So first of all, acceptance. It took me a while to accept myself. Like I said, I feel like a newborn. I feel like I've only just been on the journey of self-acceptance, really exploring what works for me, really exploring, you know, how to, you know, show up for myself. So accepting, because that's what I did. I had to accept myself and divorce all those negative words that I used to describe myself. The words like useless, stupid, dumb, you know, not intelligent, just those things. Just divorce that mindset. That's not who you are. It doesn't apply to you. You're not that person. And then trying to think of, how do I work best? When I've produced my best work, what were the factors that contributed to me producing my best work, or me feeling my greatest or my best, or when was I energized? Thinking back to it and trying to recreate the situation around that. So when I was writing my dissertation for my BSc, it took me a while to start. But then I started when one of my friends came to stay with us at the same time, we're both writing our disso at the same time, and we would literally sit at my dining table from afternoon to night and write together. And that was like now I know it's body doubling, which I didn't at the time. Then we'd literally sit together and we'd work, and I got so much work done. And when I was doing my master's, it took me a while to start my dissertation, like a long time. It took me 8 months to write something that should have taken 3 months, right? I had to keep extending it. And I didn't know why I was unable to do my work. I didn't know why I was so disinterested. I didn't know what was going on, until I thought to myself, how did I even get this work done in the first place for my first degree? And I remembered, wait, I had somebody with me. And then I recreated that situation. And then it was fine. And then I got it done. And I probably wrote a bunch of, sorry for my for this colorful word, bunch of crap, but I got it done, right? And you know, and it was because I had somebody else who was doing something similar. So trying to think back to, like I said, when you've done something well and what was the factors contributing to that. Also, like I said, understanding that having so many things to do doesn't necessarily mean you'll be productive. So really pacing yourself and being in tune with your body. When do you feel, what do you do that makes your body feel so tired? What do you do that makes your body feel energized? Do you need to do yoga in the morning to go through your day, or at night or in the evening, you do yoga, you go for a walk? What are the factors contributing to, like I said, when you've, you know, been your best self, or when you've produced your best work? So I would say really understanding yourself and exploring different ways. If something you're used to no longer works, that's fine. Let's try something new. Keep exploring different ways and really scheduling joy. I think in everything we do, we have to schedule joy. And I know this sounds silly. And what does that mean? It means doing things you enjoy just for the sake of it. It doesn't have to be to make money. It doesn't have to be productive. It could literally be, for me, for example, it's me watching K-drama with my mom and my sisters. It's watching K-drama with my mom and my sisters. It's going to my friend's house and literally just gossiping about nonsense, drinking tea, you know, tea, having tea time, you know, going for walks, having girl night, you know, girls night, and just doing things that, just little pockets of things. And I feel like you have to schedule joy every week. Otherwise, I feel like if you don't schedule joy every week, there's a possibility that you burn out very quickly. And learning how to say no. I'm still learning, by the way.
Me too. I'm still learning to say no. I just say yes to everything. And yes. Why did I say yes to this?
Yes. I always want my favorite thing to say to myself is, who sent me? And why did you say yes? Who sent you? So learning how to say no. And okay. So yeah, I would say that those are like some of the things I can think of. And those are like things that I apply that helps me. In terms of a business person, being a business owner, one thing I've learned is the business doesn't die just because you're unable to do something once or because you need to rest. It's not going to go up in flames and collapse. You might think, if I don't do this thing, the world will end. It won't. Trust me. It's going to be fine. You can't put an Instagram post out. You're going to be okay, okay? Like, it's fine. Like, don't overthink it. Don't overwhelm yourself. Pace yourself. Schedule joy. Schedule rest. And, you know, figure out what works best for you. And let your brain work. Like, make your brain work for you in the way it knows how to. Which is
not against you.
Not against you, exactly. Not against you. And if you're a believer, like one of my prayers that I say regularly is like, oh Allah, what you call it? You created me this way. You know why you created me this way. Put lots of blessing in my time and in my efforts. So if I can only work for 2 hours in a day, put so much blessing in it that 2 hours would be like I've done 5 hours of work. Do you know what I mean?
If you're a believer,
let your prayers work for you, right? Like, you talk to God, you connect with God, and you say to him, like, first of all, big guy, I didn't create myself like this. You made me like this. And sorry, sir, I'm not saying you've done wrong. Like, I'm just saying, well done, you did that. But I'm just asking you to, you know, put lots of blessing in my time, in my efforts, right? I think one of the things that really happened for me in October was around October time, I was feeling so overwhelmed. There were so many things I felt that I needed to do with the business. So many things I felt wasn't going right. And I felt like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore because I just feel like I can't do it. And it feels like my brain is working against me and my body's working against me. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to quit. And then I was actually, before I quit, I'm going to consult God and just talk to God and just say, oh, like, yeah, Allah, I want to quit. What should I do next? And then I did a prayer. And then the very next day, I was invited to go on a retreat for Black women in tech, a free retreat, by the way, for Black, literally the next day after I made this prayer, I was invited to go on a retreat for Black women in tech. And, you know, it was literally like 3 days in somewhere in around Bath, a private like house with a private chef. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. I met so many amazing Black women, Black girls in tech, by the way, BGIT. They did the retreat and I hope they do another one soon because it was brilliant. And I went on that retreat and I met quite a few Black women, spoke to them about what I was building, and they absolutely loved it. And they just poured so much love and so much light and so much life into me to continue going. So my point is prayer, community, people who can, you know, pour into you and who can like help you. And that month, a lot happened for me that month without me doing anything. All I did was go on the retreat, did a LinkedIn post, redid my the website that took a few days to do because I paced myself, and, you know, got a free retreat and got featured in Color in Tech. Literally, like I said, hardly did anything. I just, what did I do? Consulted my God and said, God, please help me, and please, you know, make my time, put blessing in my time so I can get lots done in a short time. Because let's be honest, sometimes you want to do something, but your brain says no. And if your brain says no, it's no.
Yeah.
When your brain says no, it's no. There's no amount of like, there's literally not much you can do. If your brain does not want to do it, your brain doesn't want to do it. And we have to understand that there are chemical reactions and hormones and going on like that. And it's not that you don't want to do it, especially if you're ambitious. you're someone who has bright and great ideas, your brain doesn't work for you. Your brain might not work for you, might not work in that moment the way you want it to.
Yeah.
And stop comparing yourself to neurotypicals. It doesn't work like that. Stop comparing yourself. I need to compare myself so much that I would end up like depressing myself because I'm like, oh, this person started the year before me or the year after me. And look at this. They've done this and they've done that. And they're doing this and they can do this and they can do that. Why can't I do it? You know, stop... Pardon me, stop comparing yourself.
I don't even think you should compare yourself to even other neurodiverse people.
Right.
Because that's if, yeah, because you are your own self.
Yes.
Go at your own pace. Because sometimes there's this other thing, and this is probably going off a little bit off topic, but there's another thing about this whole thing about neurodiversity and superpowers.
Yeah.
And, that kind of like... I feel like neurodiverse people, we are amazing anyway. I'm not going to take it away. If you're neurodiverse, you're an amazing person. So if you're listening, you are amazing. With a neurodiverse condition, you are great. You're fantastic.
Amazing.
However, I'll put a disclaimer to that, is that there are some neurodiverse people that will struggle in a specific way.
Yeah.
For example, if you take autism, there's some autistics that are nonverbal. And they may never be able to verbalize how they feel or what they're saying,
yes,
or express their emotions.
Yes.
They might be able to communicate in a different way, but they can maybe not verbalize that. Does it make them any more or less or more of a superpower or whatever?
No.
Or they're not incapable? They just have a difference in how they express themselves.
Exactly.
So we have to be always... Like, I always am cautious to win about this whole superpower thing within neurodiversity.
Same.
I just think it can become like a toxic, you know, activity rather than actually seeing the condition for what it is. Because sometimes what happens to me is like, I'll maybe look at someone else's dyslexic and think, oh, well, they're doing really well. But their dyslexia doesn't show up in the same way that my dyslexia shows up. So I can't say that my dyslexia is like maybe... I have the wrong type. I don't know, the wrong type of
thing that
person's doing better. So it's even though we do say that we shouldn't even compare ourselves to neurotypicals because their brain doesn't work. We have to be so careful of not comparing ourselves to other neurodivergents because it's a spectrum. We're all different.
Exactly.
We all handle our neurodiverse conditions in different ways. Someone might look at me as a neurodivergent and think, how is she able to do a podcast? I can't do that. But if you give yourself a look at what you have, you can. So it's very important that people understand that because I'm very aware of like toxic positivity. It's not, I'm not saying you shouldn't be positive, but let's look at the situation for it is and manage that situation according to what you are capable of doing. So yeah, I might add that to say...
No, I 110% agree with you, like, completely. You know, you see a lot of things on the internet, on Twitter, on Instagram. Like you said, it's like toxic positivity. You know, you're a superpower, or you're a magician, or just, you know, these words that we use to describe neurodiversity. And it doesn't really, yes, I get it's trying to make people feel great and feel better, but in the long run, it might do more damage than good. But just not to, like, generally just not to compare your journey with anybody, really. Like you said, go at your own pace and do your own thing. And like I said, what works for you? Make your brain work for you, not make your brain work for me or the next person, for you. And, you know, and hopefully, you know, by the grace of God, we're all going to be fine.
We'll be fine. I wanted to talk about a workshop that we could do together later on. We haven't got a specific date, but it'd be great for you to do a workshop where we can actually meet live with other neurodivergents about particularly around mental health, well-being, and how to sort of navigate that as neurodivergent. Especially if we're dealing with the intersectionality of being a Black neurodivergent. Do you want us to put that out and that kind of give us a teaser of what we might be discussing? We're still planning it, but
yeah.
I want to put it out there on the podcast so that you guys can register. We'll put a link in both of our bios.
Yeah.
Before you actually go, you need to give me all your handles.
And my handles.
So that all the audience can contact you.
Okay, so for the business, it's on both Twitter and Instagram, it's Anfani Anfani_Inc. So it's Anfani. I mean, you're gonna put it down anyway. You're gonna put it in the show notes. Yeah. So it's Anfani_Inc. on both Twitter and Instagram. Our website is anfani.co. And my personal, I don't know, my personal in social media handle without help, without, I don't know, do they want it? Okay, yeah. I guess I could give it. My personal Instagram and Twitter handle, both the same, is Ajike Ajoke. And on LinkedIn, I'm just Motunrayo Oyetunji. And personal email, I don't know, would they need an email? Am I thinking too deep into it? And my email is literally, if you want to email me, my email is literally tomorrow@anfani.co. And I guess all this information will be in the show notes.
In the show notes, yeah.
You can contact me, send me a message, or send me a tweet, or send me a DM. And yeah, and we can talk. And, you know, we'll really have quite a few things planned for the app this year. So we're really, by God's grace, hoping to launch the first version of the product this year by Q2, and we obviously need people to test it out, first set of users and stuff. So of course, if you're a Black woman who resonates with what we're trying to build, we need you. We're also trying to do more in-person events and more, you know, community events. So if you follow us on Instagram and Twitter, we would always announce any event that we have on there. And yeah, and we're just trying to really cultivate and build our community this year and ensure that we're building a product that you actually need, as opposed to being a product, building a product that we think you need. Because yeah, those are two different things.
The app, is it just for Black women in the UK, or is it for Black women all over the world?
So it's the big picture is it will be for Black women everywhere, but to test the first version, we are going to be testing with just women in the UK to just really try to like make sure that we're not biting more than we can chew, because really and truly, if you open it to the wider audience too early, it might be a bit harder to like mitigate, like, you know, certain, you know, things essentially. So yeah, we're starting with the UK, but it will be available hopefully by the end of the year.
So that's for my US listeners.
Yeah. So actually, yeah. I would like to do an event. I'm aiming to do 3 major events this year, by God's grace, being alive, because only by God that I'm able to do anything, honestly. To do 3 major events this year, 1 in London, 1 in Lagos, and 1 in New York. That's like the vision, to do 2-3 main, like, big event, well, not massive, but just 3 community events this year to really like go out there and speak to our communities and understand what they need. Because, you know, like the London, what we might need in London, I mean, we all have very similar experiences, but, you know, the kind of events we might need here, or we need, or women in Nigeria need, or women in America might need, might vary. So you're trying to plan for, you know, people in different places. So stay tuned and watch out and pray for us, please. We need it.
Yes.
And support us and follow us, and, you know, tell your friends and tell your sisters and your mums, and, you know, yeah.
Okay. Thank you so, so, so much for coming on to Divine Enigma. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on today, talking about your experience of having ADHD, and also your little bit of your experience in the tech industry, and also your mental health well-being. I'm definitely sure this will be of so much value to our listeners who might be going through something quite similar. So thank you so much, Motunrayo. You have been an absolute gem to have on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for your support and your kind words and just being you. Thank you. Thank you for this platform. Honestly, really appreciate it. Really happy to be here. Thank you so much.
I want to let our audience members know about the 6-week coaching program that I will be offering for people who are neurodivergent, or you could be neurotypical, who want to improve their career prospects in general, or who just want to, you know, get into project management. I mentioned this earlier in my previous episodes, but I want to ensure that I take the time to offer it up again for those who are looking for help in those areas of their life. That is a great way to learn skills to help you advance in your career. I'm also offering support to people who want to pass the Prince 2 exam, as I've taken and failed the test a few times. And I would like to help others by showing them how I pass. Now, if this sounds interesting to you or you'd like to learn more, please reach out to me directly via email, which is at hello@divineenigma.org, or you can DM me on my social media, which is all Divine Enigma. I've also launched, this is the thing I've been waiting for a while, I've launched my membership, NeuroEnigma. It's currently priced at £25 a month until this Sunday. So depending on what time, so this episode at the moment, I'm recording it on the 16th of February. So the offer will end on the 18th of February. So hopefully by the time you listen to this episode, it will be, maybe you might have missed that on offer. And then I'll be increasing it to £35 a month. But if you sign up annually, you will only have to pay £150 for the whole year. Plus, the first five people to sign up to NeuroEnigma will be given a SAD lamp in the post. And the SAD lamp, you're probably asking, what's this? It's a lamp that is used to help people regulate their sleep patterns, particularly if we're in a country like the UK or some parts of the world where you tend to have very short days and very long nights. And so that can disrupt your mood and give you seasonal depression, ultimately. So, yes, if you do sign up annually, it's £150. After that, the price will increase to £250 per year. And within that membership, I'll be having monthly coaching calls. I'll also be having many experts on neurodiversity come on to the platform to teach you about different techniques on how you can manage your neurodiverse conditions. We'll be having in-person meetups internationally and in the UK as well. And there's so many more things that are on offer for you to really get the most of this membership. So I will suggest you check the bio if you're watching on YouTube, or you can also check the show notes of this podcast. So if this sounds like a fantastic offer for you, and it is a fantastic offer because very soon it will go up in price and you will not get this offer again, please go to neuroenigma.com and sign up. Like I always like to say at the end of each episode, please follow me on all platforms where you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening to Divine Enigma. And if you got to the end, this is a safe place for project managers, professionals, side hustlers, people who own businesses, to give you the tools and tips on how to navigate the complexity of being neurodiverse in the workplace. I'll see you soon. Take care. Bye.